Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Valabha Girivaradhari, Gopi Valabha, Gopi Jana Valabha Girivaradhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana, Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana, Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari, Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunja Bihari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare. Jaya Kishore Kishore, Jaya Kishore Kishore, Jaya Kishore Kishore, Jaya Kishore Kishore. Jaya Jaya Jagannath, Jaya Jaya Jagannath, Jaya Jaya Baladev, Jaya Jaya Subhadra. Nithai Gaura Hari Bho, Hari Bho, Hari Bho, Nithai Gaura Hari Bho. Jaya Jaya Prabhupad, 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 Jaya Jaya Prabhupad.
Jayam Vishnu Padaya Paramhamsa Parivegacharya Astatarasata His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Jayam Vishnu Padaya Paramhamsa Parivegacharya Astatarasata His Divine Grace Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Goswami Prabhupada Ki. Ananta Kodi Vaishnava Vrinda Ki. Grantarat Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. All glories to the assembly of devotees. All glories to the assembly of devotees. All glories to the assembly of devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Manchakal Patrvias Chakri Pasin Vizava Chapati and Pavana Vivashna Vivana Munama. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today's reading is from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 22, entitled Krishna Steals the Gopis' Garments, verses 33 and 34. We start with a chanting of the verse. Aho asham varam janma sarva prani upa jivanam sujanas yeva yesham vai vimukha yanti narthinaha. Aho asham varam janma sarva prani upajivanam sujana seva yesham vai vimukha yanti nartinaha. Aho asham varam janma sarva prani upajivanam Sujana Sevaya Shambhai Vimukkayanti Nartinaha Ahashamvaram Janma Sarva Prane Upajivanam Sujana Sevaya Shambhai Vimukkayanti Nartinaha. Thank you for chanting with me, and thank you for coming to today's class. We will go to a word-by-word translation. Aho! Oh, just see! Esham! Of these trees! Varam! Superior! Janma, birth, sarva, for all, prani, living entities, upajivinam, who provide maintenance, sujanasya iva, like a great personality. Yesham, from whom, why, certainly, vimukaha, disappointed, yanti, go away, na, never, arthinaha, those who are asking for something. Translation to the verse. Just see how these trees are maintaining ever-living entity. Their birth is successful. Their behavior is just like that of great personalities. For anyone who asks anything from a tree never goes away disappointed. And there is a purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Srila Prabhupada. This translation is quoted from Srila Prabhupada's Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 9, verse 46, which I thought we will read since the purport refers to these verses. I thought I would read the purport to these verses from Chaitanya Charitamrita to maybe catch some points from there. Verse 34, we'll just read the translation. These trees fulfill one's desires with their leaves, flowers, and fruits, their shade, roots, bark, and wood, and also with their fragrance, sap, ashes, pulp, and shoots. Thank you for coming once again to this class. And like I said, we will read the purport to the same verse from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Just find it real quick. The reference here says chapter 9 of Adi Lila. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, verse 46, which is the same as here in Srimad Bhagavatam, and the purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Srila Prabhupada is to that verse is that according to Vedic civilization, kshatriyas are considered to be great personalities because if anyone goes to a kshatriya king to ask for charity, the king will never refuse. The trees are compared to those noble kshatriyas because everyone derives all kinds of benefits from them. Some people take fruit, others take flowers, others take leaves, others take twigs, and others even cut the tree, and yet the tree gives to everyone without hesitation. And the purport goes on to develop these points. some of these points. Unnecessarily cutting trees without consideration is another example of human debauchery. The paper industry cuts many hundreds and thousands of trees for its mills, and with the paper, so much rubbish literature is published for the whimsical satisfaction of human society. Unfortunately, although these industrialists are now happy in this life by dint of their industrial development, they do not know that they will incur responsibility for killing these living entities who are in the form of trees. This verse quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken by Lord Krishna to his friends when he was taking rest underneath a tree after his pastime of stealing the clothes of the gopis. By quoting this verse, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches us that we should be tolerant like trees and also beneficial like trees, which give everything to the needy persons who come underneath them. A needy person may derive many advantages from trees and also from many animals. But in modern civilization, people have become so ungrateful that they exploit the trees and animals and kill them. These are some of the sinful activities of modern civilization. This is a nice purport to the next verse, which kind of links to this and these verses. And it's a little bit shorter, but I'd like to read that one too. So purport to verse 47 of Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 9, verse 48. It is the desire of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that the benevolent activities of the Sankirtan movement, which was inaugurated 500 years ago in Navadvip, be spread all over the world for the benefit of all human beings. Unfortunately, there are many so-called followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who are satisfied simply to construct a temple, make a show of the deities, collect some funds and utilize them for eating and sleeping. There is no question of their preaching the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world. But even though they are unable to do so, if anyone else does it, they become envious. This is the condition of the modern followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The age of Kali is so strong that it affects even the so-called followers of Lord Chaitanya. At least the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu must come out of India to preach his cult all over the world, for this is the mission of Lord Chaitanya. The followers of Lord Chaitanya must execute his will with heart and soul, being more tolerant than the trees and humbler than the straw in the street. And I'll just read one more purport, very short, to the next verse. So here the wonderful fruit of love of Godhead distributed by Lord Chaitanya is described. The verse 48 reads, the fruit of love of God is so delicious that wherever a devotee distributes it, those who relish the fruit anywhere in the world immediately become intoxicated. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Here the wonderful fruit of love of Godhead distributed by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is described. We have practical experience that anyone who accepts this fruit sincerely tastes it immediately, becomes mad after it, and gives up all bad habits, being intoxicated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's gift, the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. The statements of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita are so practical that anyone can test them. As far as we are concerned, we are most confident of the success of the distribution of this great fruit of love of Godhead through the medium of chanting the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Such wonderful purports to these two or three verses. What I get out of this purport is that Lord Chaitanya is the most benevolent personality because his only desire is to make people spiritually happy. That's the only desire. And members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness follow in this mood of making people spiritually happy. We try our best for the sake of Srila Prabhupada and the Parampara. At least we make sure those who are not so much interested, at least they get some prasadam and and hear some Maha Mantra from afar, even if they don't come to the temple. Then Lord Jagannath is always there outside to distribute the mercy for those who never make it to the temple. So in this class, I would like to talk a little bit about different levels of doing good to others. So Lord Chaitanya is the most benevolent personality, and then people in this world, they have different definitions of what it is to be good and benevolent. First of all, I'll give you some synonyms of what benevolence is, some words that can be used interchangeably kind of with this word, benevolence. So benevolent means someone's kind, good, compassionate, generous, magnanimous, munificent, and gracious. So in philosophical circles, there is this debate going on, and it's like a classic debate. What is goodness? You know, what is benevolence? What is true goodness? Is there such thing as, you know, objective goodness, or is it all subjective, relative? Does goodness, benevolence change based on times and circumstances? So these are some of the points or dilemmas that, you know, philosophers of the medieval, ancient times and, you know, modern times have had. And most likely from my studies in school, they were never resolved, you know. There's always some other philosopher who came around and posted a different, you know, postulated a different philosophy of goodness, benevolence, and he seemed to overshadow the other philosophers. And then, you know, 50 years later, another philosopher came and he postulated another definition of what it is to be good to others. And so it's a never-ending debate for those who are more or less outside of the deeper circles of spirituality. So like I said, in this class we will explore different levels of doing good to others and the implications of doing good to others at different levels. I will start with some simple examples that kind of helped me see it clearly. Srila Prabhupada, I think, I remember he would give sometimes this example. So I'll give you my understanding of this. Let's say someone finds a $10 bill on the street, and a devotee would pick it up and first of all look around if it belongs to anyone. You know, we all understand that the bill, $10 bill on the street, belongs to Krishna ultimately, but in the meantime someone was in the possession of this $10 bill and they lost it, so they look around. No one is claiming it. It's empty, you know, around. The street is empty. Not so the devotee decides to maybe purchase some vegetarian foodstuffs. We call it boga, and then offer, make with that, with those with the money he buys that food, and he offers to Krishna, prepares some food, vegetarian food, and offers to Krishna. In this way, he tries to make the Lord happy by utilizing the money to make some nutritious food for the Lord, and then once the Lord blesses it and tastes it, the devotee will honor it and consume the sanctified food, prasadam. And in this way, not only the Lord is happy, but also we are strengthening the body, mind, and the spirit. We become stronger in the body, mind, and spirit, and we become stronger in our spiritual practice by eating prasadam. Not only that, but also the person whose money was used in such a devotional act will receive some benefit from it. So sooner or later, that benefit will be manifest in their life, maybe they'll come in touch with a devotee in the near future to make another step. They'll be more open to becoming more spiritual, coming closer to God. So that person who lost that bill and whose $10 bill was used by someone else who is a devotee will also get that benefit. So that's one scenario, the spiritual scenario. Let's say someone, there's another person who finds that $10 bill and then they happily grab it because they're very hungry. They run to a nearby store and they purchase some food, and some of this food is not so clean. They have some flesh food and get some wine as well. And they rush home and then consume it and enjoy it. So immediately there's some pleasure or enjoyment, so goodness to the body and mind, according to the experience of the subjective experience of that person. So they use that money to purchase something for themselves, or maybe for the family, share the wine, share the food obtained by such means, and that person may enjoy immediately, but also no one else is benefited spiritually. There is no spiritual dimension because the person used that food for their own gratification. There was no thought of God and offering or thanking God for the food. So that's a different consciousness of the person, and therefore different result. So they will not obtain any spiritual higher result from that kind of activity. And then they didn't even ask if maybe look around, maybe the $10 bill belongs to somebody. So that's another scenario. And then the third possibility is that, person, they don't have the good luck and they don't find a $10 bill in the street, but they're so frustrated that they actually assault someone in the parking lot and ask them for money, and they get the $10 bill anyway. They're frustrated. So, theft. They get the money, they run to the store, get the food. And they may not be even that lucky. They may be immediately reported, and maybe before they get to enjoy the whatever food they would have gotten, they get stopped by the police. So there may be immediate reaction for such act, and they may not even have any immediate gratification from this money obtained by such means. So these are three different similar scenario, but three different types of consciousness of the person who acts. How do they obtain the means of livelihood, of food, and then what do they do with the food? What's their consciousness? What are they thinking about? What's their goal when they obtain, buy the food, and prepare the food and consume it, or use it for themselves? The scriptures tell us that the first actor, the devotee, acts in the mode of goodness, or even pure goodness, transcendental goodness. And then the second person who obtained their money and they obtained food for just their own sense gratification, or the sense gratification of their family, without thinking of God, that person may be asking, may be acting in the mode of passion. And then the person who was so frustrated that they assaulted someone and stole the money, that person is more in the mode of ignorance, the lowest mode of the three modes of nature. There are three modes of nature with which living entities act in this material world: passion, goodness, and ignorance. And the more, even more spiritual mode, the transcendental goodness mode, which devotees act, everything for the sake of and the pleasure of God. So these are the three examples. And then also have another example that came to my mind that can maybe kind of give you a clear idea of myself, clarified things about different types of goodness. So let's say someone comes up to me or comes up to you and asks you, "I'm in very big trouble. My family doesn't like me. My health is deteriorating. I am about to lose my job. I am miserable. I have so many problems from all sides coming at me." So I tell this person, "Listen, just take a step back and then go, just relax, go to the bar, get some alcohol, party a little bit, relax, and go to sleep. And then the next day you'll feel better, guaranteed." Okay, so I give this person this advice. They come to me for help, right? And I give them some, according to my understanding, I give them this instruction or encouragement. "Yeah, go do this, you'll feel better." So they may listen to me, and what would that person get? They obviously will forget about their troubles for a few hours when they drink and dance and then sleep for 10 or 12 hours, and then they wake up, their mind is kind of dull, they don't feel great, and then again they remember the problems and it's happening again. Nothing has changed. So another possibility is that when this person comes to me, I can say, "You know, you have so many problems with your family and your health is not good and you're not getting along with your boss at work. What I can do for you, I can give you this business card, this contact information of my friend who is a great counselor. He's great and he's going to help you improve your relationship with your family and with your boss. And I'll also give you another business card of my friendly personal trainer who can get you on track, you know, get you back in the groove so you exercise, so it's good for you. You're happy with the body. The psychologist will help you with your mind. And then you'll be able to resume your activities in your family and at work, and you'll be ready, continue to enjoy and keep going with your life." And he listens to me and he promises that he will do that. So this kind of advice may actually work at one level. So this person pays the psychologist, they get some sessions, counseling, and they're willing to try something to improve their relationship with their family. And they also sign up for some exercise classes at the local gym with that friendly instructor, and they're building their health and strength in the mind. So they are a little bit longer term, staying functional and enjoy life, yeah? Trying to get back on track to enjoy. So this level of instruction is what in the Western society is usually like a quick fix, you know. Just see a counselor, maybe get some medications, maybe do some exercise and keep going with your plan of enjoyment. So that's a solution short term, right? Not forever, maybe for a year or two. Then you have to maybe see a counselor again or something else happens. And another scenario is that, let's say what a devotee would do. If someone approaches him, a devotee would tend to give this type of advice, you know. "My friend, I feel very bad for you that you're going through this. Let me tell you from my own experience. What has worked for me is actually reading this great book that was spoken to a warrior on the battlefield who was in a dilemma of what to do with his activities and his life. So this book really helped me and I changed my life. Why don't you come with me to our friendly temple and meet my friends and also get some, you know, free vegetarian food that's very healthy for your body. You'll feel great right away. So I invite you with your family or by yourself. Come and benefit and see how you feel. You know, see how you feel after visiting and get to know more people. You know, I'll be happy to hang out with you at the temple there. So the person agrees, and then in a day or two they go to the temple. We go to the temple together, and that conditioned soul is exposed to the mantra and taste the sanctified food, prasadam, meet some devotee friends, make some friends, you know. So is able to associate with spiritually minded people, which has an effect on the mind and the soul. And the body is nourished as well with some healthy food. So also, I could give that person a business card of my friendly counselor, just to take care of that aspect. But in this situation, in this scenario, there's a metaphysical dimension which we try to incorporate and help the conditioned soul. The metaphysical dimension has to be there in the solution to any problem if someone approaches us. The difficulty with modern-day solution is that they try to solve the problems at the body level or the mental level, and the spiritual level is often neglected. And we also have this tendency to think that, yes, indeed, we can fix the problems ourselves. We don't need anyone's help. You know, like, meaning, you need God to help you. We can figure it out. We're smart. We've made so much progress over the centuries, you know. Look at our civilization. But the problem is that the more things we come up with and create in this world, technological advances and great improvements in medicine, they do not put an end to our difficulties. Actually, there are more different types of difficulties coming around, different types of diseases. The more we come up with and create some solutions, the more problems arise, and it's never ending. It's never ending. Okay, it's like you may be a great swimmer, and you keep swimming, but you have to get across the ocean. So you might need a boat. You might need a sturdy ship. Just by your own strength, you will not be able to conquer the ocean, however good you are. This is one of the examples that Srila Prabhupada used. So, so in all these situations that I gave you, these two situations and three different individuals who acted differently and gave different instructions or acted in different ways, in the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. And so in all three situations, there is a level of presumed goodness performed directly to the body of the person acting, but it's in each situation, the goodness is more or less overshadowed by the negative burden of how the money was obtained and the food, how the food was used, and the consciousness of the actor. And same with the instructions given to someone who was seeking help, you know, got family problems and work problems and ill health. My consciousness was different, my knowledge was different, and therefore I gave this person different types of advice according to my knowledge. So Bhagavad Gita also describes that the knowledge we have in which we can share with others is at three levels as well. Ignorance, immediate sense gratification, passion, you know, quick fix solution, maybe a little bit longer term, but very goal-oriented solution that can get us back on our feet and so we can keep enjoying this material world. And then solution in the mode of goodness that or true goodness that has the metaphysical dimension that always that should be there, because the conditioned soul, as Bhagavad Gita says in chapter 15, verse 7, mamayivamshu jiva loke jiva bhutah sanatanaha. The conditioned soul is struggling with the six senses, which include the mind. So the struggle is never ending. Krishna says elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita that all these three worlds, even if we go to the heavenly planet in the material world, or here, the middle planets, or the lowest hellish planets, all are places of misery, because no matter how much you enjoy and how long you're able to enjoy, or how much you suffer, there's always, you know, you have to quit the situation, you have to die or leave the situation. Even demigods leave their bodies, may not be in painful ways like human beings, but they also have to leave their situation. So there's a death, physical death, change of situation, and there is, you know, disease, especially in the middle planets of the material world, and there is old age, and birth is painful as well. You can ask any woman, you know, who had children. You know, it's painful, but because we have so much desire to enjoy and happiness, we still are willing to undergo the process of giving birth to a child. So, yes, the metaphysical dimension has to be there. Otherwise, this conditioned soul will keep going and suffering birth after birth. The same four types of suffering: birth, old age, disease, and death. But it so happens that if by good fortune a conditioned soul comes in contact with a devotee of the Lord, devotee of Krishna, devotee of Vishnu, devotee of God, that person will have a chance to get that metaphysical solution and incorporate it into their lifestyle. You know, conditioned souls come with different types of baggage and burden from past lives. That's why different types of individuals may undergo different types of suffering and different intensities of tribulations. But if they get this spiritual injection, if they get the spiritual metaphysical dimension, they add it to their lives. Their life will be successful, and sooner or later they will not have to be face the same tribulations again. They will not be. Will not have to be reborn into this material atmosphere. They'll come back to the original spiritual sky, where there is no death, no birth, no death, no disease, no old age. You're always blissful and serving the Lord and His servants. This is what the scriptures say, and there's a spiritual sky. And there are some vivid descriptions, and it's not something vague. It is actually very clearly described what's out there. And it so happens that if you add this spiritual dimension to your life by giving good advice, spiritual advice to others, and maybe not neglecting some material advice, but for sure not neglecting, not omitting the spiritual advice, your material problems will be solved automatically, and sometimes in often unexpected ways. You know, Krishna is very, God is very, works in mysterious ways. He can surprise us. The problems get solved in unexpected ways, even without you much trying. You just focus on the spiritual life, and then with ease you'll be able to conquer the, you know, four types of suffering and different types of lesser types of suffering, you know, whatever is going on in the family, at the work, and in the world. Also, another important point is that in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, verses 14 to 15, Lord Krishna describes to Arjuna three different factors in action. So there are five factors of action. There is the super soul, or God within. Then there is you, the soul, and your desires. Contaminated desires or purified desires. And you have your senses, you know, sense of touch, sense of smell, sense of sight, and then you have your body. So in each action you perform, these five factors are in effect. They are acting. And oftentimes when you work, when you act, you know, conditioned souls act at, you know, in the mode of passion or ignorance. They're not fully aware of those five factors, and they're not able to act with knowledge and with proper consciousness, and therefore they run into reactions. Improper action causes a painful reaction sooner or later. The most important factor is the super soul or God within, and we just need to recognize that whether you perform something good or bad, there is somehow a sanction from the Lord. Without the Lord's sanction, you cannot perform anything. You cannot do anything, even a bad act. So one may ask, why does the Lord allow us to act in improper ways? Well, there may be different answers, but a quick answer could be that we are minutely independent, and we have a free will to try to act in different ways and learn. And once you act in improper ways, there is always a consequence. You know, you act in proper ways, you have good consequence, good karma. Acting in proper ways against the God's recommendation or instructions, you encounter some painful, less pleasant reaction. Going back to the different types of goodness or benevolence, it's hard to see how even a person in ignorance might be doing any good, but in their consciousness, they are performing good to themselves by drinking alcohol and smoking cigarettes and, you know, doing whatever. In their own understanding, they're performing goodness. So they will argue with you that this is good, and someone else will argue, no, what's good for me? No, you know, exercise is good. You know, getting a good job, good education, that is good. So that's a little bit higher, more mode of passion type of understanding and knowledge and action. And then there is goodness where, you know, doing good to others, helping them, giving in charity. That's goodness, you know, because it makes you feel happy. So that's mode of goodness, right? And then transcendental goodness, which may not neglect certain types of material goodness, but which focuses on giving that spiritual instruction to conditioned souls. Like, yes, we are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. We are not happy long term. We may be happy for a little bit. So let me give you this solution, you know. Let's chant the holy name of God. Let's try to serve God. Let's try to share some spiritual books and knowledge about God, you know. Let's get involved and give up the bad habits. You know, let's give up being violent. This type of instruction is more in the mode of transcendental goodness, trying to inject into that conditioned soul some kind of a knowledge, spark their interest so they can get started on the path of spiritual life and finish this material life in this life, or, you know, in the next few births, rather than staying here for hundreds and thousands of births like we have been. So this is the lasting happiness that we can give to others by sharing this great mood, great gift of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, sharing the holy name of God and sharing this great Vedic culture, the most topmost service that we can do to Srila Prabhupada is share with others our good fortune of being able to engage in devotional service and making others very enthusing others with our own desire to serve, sharing with them. There's a nice verse in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, and that a true yogi, I think it's verse 23 or 32, a true yogi sees equality among all beings in their happiness and in their distress by dint of his own experience. If you're really introspective, you will know how you're suffering. Just by being in this material atmosphere, in this body, you are suffering. No matter what kind of a sensual enjoyment you may get, you're still suffering. This material world is designed for us to learn something and not be disillusioned about long-term happiness. So a true yogi sees that equality among all beings in their distress and in their happiness, and therefore the true yogi, Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport to that verse, shares the knowledge about bhakti yoga with others, so they get out of the suffering. So a truly benevolent act is a smart act in Krishna consciousness. One is aware of God, that God is watching, and God has some instructions for us, some rules and regulations that we can we should follow to become purified and become awake again and realize our situation. So that is the true benevolent act, acting in accordance with God's instructions and showing others by example how they can act by following the commandments, the instructions of God that God gave us, human beings. And when you do that, when you're aware of God, you become, and his instructions, and you try to follow, you become aware of your individual situation and your eternal position, and also try to share that with others. So everyone benefits and becomes happy and healthy in body, mind, and spirit. Thank you for your attention, and I hope I gave you some something to think about, and so you can share it with others. And sorry for something was not clear. I welcome any questions. Thank you.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for your class. You always make very profound points. They always remind me of so many things. You remind me of so many things, but I want to focus on one particular part of your lecture regarding giving advice to others. People may have different, according to their understanding, they give others, people different advice. Alcohol or psychologists or, in a devotee's case, devotional service. However, we see even devotional life among the community of devotees. Everyone gives one particular person many different advices, according to their understanding. Mm. And so we see regarding this verse, regarding the tree, one thing that came to mind, and there's some profound point that was spoken, that you reminded me of, that was spoken by the GBC, Onuttama Prabhu, when he was here. I'll try to connect this to the verse. We see that certain seeds, certain plants, certain trees, they thrive in the desert. Some don't. And so we see in among our community, there's many different types of devotees, Brahmana, Satriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Grihastha, Vanaprastha. So we may give an advice to Grihastha advice to somebody who's inherently a Brahmachari. So they're probably not going to thrive in that ashram, but we don't know. So sometimes we hear all the time that if somebody doesn't want to take your advice, that's because, you want to hear the advice you want. Or maybe it's because you're not the proper person to advise me. Maybe I won't flourish with your advice. So I hear that so many times. So one analogy that Onuttama Prabhu, two analogies, profound analogies he gave. He says that if somebody is giving advice, we should be very slow to speak and quick to listen. So he gave an analogy. When a diseased patient goes to the doctor, does the doctor prescribe a medicine without listening to the patient? Hey, I have a prescription for you. Well, you don't know what my symptoms are. So how can you prescribe something? So he was making this analogy. If we're taking the position of shiksha gurus or advisors, but we don't like to hear people's problems. And we want to prescribe something, give them advice. He was like, that's like a doctor prescribing something to somebody without even listening to them. So we see that Lord Chaitanya, he listened to Sarvabhaumacharya for 7 days straight without looking irritated, without rolling his eyes, without prescribing something. Why? Because he had to hear what was his disease so he could give a diagnosis. But if we don't like to hear people even for, Chaitanya listened to him for 7 days straight, but if we don't even like to listen to people for 7 seconds or 7 minutes straight, that means we require the prescription because we're the diseased ones. So this is what Anuttama Prabhu was essentially saying for people who want to take the position of shiksha gurus or advisors. He also gave a very another profound analogy too. He says, if a person is lost on the road, and they do not have a GPS system, so they may call their friend up who's hooked up to the internet at home. They may call their friend, hey friend, I'm lost in the highway. I have no idea where I am. And can you help me? And so Anuttama says, what is the first thing the friend would tell the person who's lost on the highway or wherever? The first thing the friend will ask them is, where are you?
Exactly.
So I could tell you where you have to go. You have to listen to a person. Where are you at in your Krishna consciousness? Therefore, I could give you some advice to get you where you're going. But if I give you some directions and I don't know where you're at in your Krishna consciousness, then I'm simply, I'm going to misguide you.
Yes.
And so the last point I'd like to mention, I actually mentioned this several days ago. Mm-hmm. The most important thing for anyone who wants to give advice is we can see people transform people's lives just by listening. People want to pour their problems out of heart. Mm-hmm. And there's a nice quote that says, nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. Mm-hmm. So if you just start giving advice to somebody and you don't listen to them, you have no relationship, like they're going to listen to you, and like you can really give sound advice. So this is the, I'll mention this last point. Maybe you could expand on this point. This is, there's a verse that appears in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I quoted it the other day, but I didn't have the exact quote, but now I do. Fortunately, I'm glad you brought this up. So this is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, chapter 25, verse 267. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to read Prabhupada's report. Prabhupada is just explaining the same thing from the verse. Mm-hmm. So basically, he was explaining that Chaitanya, the verse basically says, Chaitanya, he would speak Krishna Katha, and he will empower devotees so that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself will listen to Krishna Katha from his devotees. So Prabhupada says in his report, it is the duty of an acharya to not only speak Krishna Katha, but he must also listen to Krishna Katha and encourage others to speak Krishna Katha to him.
Wow.
And in this way, we'll know whether people are actually have a disease in Krishna consciousness, or whether we could prescribe them properly, or whether they're actually successful in their Krishna consciousness. But if we don't like to listen to others, which we could see in Kali Yuga, nobody likes to listen to anybody but themselves.
Yes, yes.
And therefore, how can we this is the profound point Anuttama Prabhu was advising people who take the position of shiksha gurus. If we don't like to listen to others, then we're actually going to be misguiding people instead of guiding them. And so maybe in your own life, maybe you could expand on these points if you have any thoughts. I don't have necessarily a question. You just reminded me some profound point Anuttama Prabhu mentioned and some verses from the Chaitanya Charitamrita regarding the subject matter. Maybe you could expand on this point if you like. So I would love to hear your thoughts. You always expand the topics and give profound points. So.
Thank you. Thank you for making those points. Very good. I really like those examples. Wow. If we consider the devotee community, it may be a little bit different, you know, giving guidance to each other. The devotees are spiritually minded and they understand the philosophy. We are on the same page, kind of the same wavelength. And then within that wavelength, there are different levels or, you know, some devotees need more help in the grihastha ashram, some devotees need more help in the brahmacharya ashram. So it would be good to seek advice of those who are in the same ashram. That's what I have done years ago. I would get some nice advice from grihastha devotees who were successful in their ashram and in doing the service, you know, nicely. So I took advice. Oh, should I, you know, I have these desires and I get this, you know, and then what should I do? What do you think? What are the possibilities? What can I expect to encounter when I take this path? And then what can I expect to encounter when I choose a different path? Also, Srila Prabhupada gave this nice example to one devotee. I think it's in Hari Sari's, Prabhupada's diary, or, you know, the name of those nice diaries, Hari Sari's diary. Something, I was somewhere there that a devotee asked Prabhupada if he should marry or if he should remain a brahmachari monk. So Prabhupada said something to the effect that a lion is strong on land and he can deal with a lot on land, but if the lion is in the water, he's much weaker, and a crocodile or some other, even the water itself may contribute to the lion's, fall down or fall. And then similarly, crocodile is very strong in the water, that's his element, but if the crocodile has to stay for a prolonged time on land, the crocodile is more likely to perish or, you know, fall down. So, in this way, Prabhupada was, Srila Prabhupada was explaining that we have to know our strengths and weaknesses within our spiritual practice and within our, you know, mind and body, and then we have to seek advice of those who are successful in different, as grihasthas or brahmacharis, sannyasis, varnaprasthas, and then we can decide for ourselves, okay, you know. But always in general, we can read Srila Prabhupada's books and get great advice from there. However, sometimes we get confused. I was getting confused, like, because I was reading one purport and then somewhere else I read this instruction and I was confused, like, seems like this is the best ashram, or, oh no, this is the best ashram. I don't know, I'm confused, but I'm not doing so well anyway, so let me take advice from a senior devotee. And then, it worked out. We have to know which devotees are more likely to help us with their very specific instructions for our very specific situations. And obviously you have your Diksha Guru, you have, you know, Shiksha Gurus, but once again, specific situation may call for a very specific advice from those who may not be even your very close friends within the community, and maybe someone who is qualified in that particular field, who is a devotee, but you don't know him so well, but you still go and for advice because they're so qualified in that particular field. Maybe there are some main devotees counselors, you know, so maybe you go to that devotee even though you don't know them well, versus just going to your devotee who you talk to every day, but then he or she is not able to help you in your particular, stagnant point or your sticking point. You cannot get over certain obstacles in your life. So there are possibilities. We have to be cautious, obviously, like you said. You want to listen a lot before you can give advice, and it's a good idea not to give advice until you're asked. Until you're asked, you can just listen and maybe describe your own experience, but stay away from giving advice unless you're specifically in that position, like, you know, teachers or someone pays you to give them advice about something, and that's your job, you have to. That's the job, so. I hope that helps a little bit. Thank you. Any other questions, anything? Hare Krishna.
It's not specifically a question, it's just making a connection with in the conversation, one of the reasons that Anuttama Prabhu, that Jai Baladev was quoting what he was saying in persons having a certain role and giving advice, one of the reasons that he was recommending listening to someone was that inevitably persons, when they speak their problems, they see the solution for themselves.
Mm.
So I was just commenting on that. Of course, that's not discounting the points you were making and the illustrations you were giving, because the emphasis you were putting on was that persons give advice based on their knowledge, and that's certainly, you know, in a different category.
Mm-hmm.
You were looking from a different angle. But anyway, just making a connection with Jai Baladev's comment.
Thank you, Mataji. Thank you so much. Okay, any other questions? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.